Thanks, Evelyn. I've gotten my bell rung plenty of times. This is the little stuff. We're big stuff. At least we like to think that way anyways. But some great suggestions from Evelyn. She's a wonderful support for the home group members here at Vining's Group. Our next speaker tonight is Matt H., and Matt has 31 years of sobriety.
My name's Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. And I wonder if you all will do me just one quick favor. Would you all stand up a minute? Yeah. You can stretch out a little bit if you feel like it. Kind of like the seventh inning stretch, you know? Okay, thank you very much. I really want to thank Amy for making sure that I got here today. I'm getting old and I can't remember a lot. So I asked, I said, make sure you call me, you know, early so that I'll be there and all. And she did. She did a great job of making certain that I would be here. And I always appreciate an opportunity to come to AA meetings and to do anything I can for Alcoholics Anonymous. Gifts that I see are quite simple for me. And I'm sure that everyone sees things from their own perspective. And my situation was, as a very young man in my 20s and all, I'd grown up in this so-called, well, a Christian family. My father was a Methodist minister. I really hadn't had exposure to drinking. I can blame no relatives for my drinking. It was just something I chose to do on my own. And it wasn't long, it was not long, before I got so much into the alcohol that I began to lose some of my values and perspectives on life. And the worst thing that happened to me was that my son, who was 1 year old, and my wife and I just couldn't get along because of my drinking. And I went through a separation, which was very painful. And, you know, to make a long story short, I think I can better describe the whole story in a little story that you all remember. So everything that I really know for sure that has made my life what it is, I pretty much learned it in kindergarten. That's where my thinking stopped. And there was a story that I never knew that they taught me in kindergarten or first grade or something. I never understood why they taught me the story in the first place. You all could probably help me with it. It said something about Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall, and that Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, and that all of the king's horses and all of his men could not put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And to me, in that story, I'm Humpty Dumpty. And I sat on the wall. And in my early 20s, I was a senior executive in a company in Atlanta. And things were going good for me for the most part. But like Humpty Dumpty, I had this great fall. And all of the king's horses and all of his men could not put me back together again. And that's how I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was a very, very sick guy. I didn't know how sick, but I was sick. I had all the right answers. Technically, I was extremely competent. Dale Carnegie was great, but feelings and emotions concerning people just did not exist. So when I came, I was like in a shell, surrounded by like a globe. And I couldn't feel other people at all. I was a big man in a very little world. My whole world consisted between my two ears. But I was a great man as long as I stayed there. But all the other people were out there hollering, hey Matt, we're over here. But I could not see them because I was dared not look out because I might find out I wasn't as important as I thought I was. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the people in Alcoholics Anonymous began to tell me the answer as to why they had taught me that story when I was very young. They said that you know that all of the king's horses and all of the king's men could not put you back together again. He said, but they never told you that the king could put you back together again. And they told me that if I would seek out the king, that he would be able to put me back together again. And so he did. And he gave me the greatest gift I could ever desire in this world. He basically fixed me. I know that we grow and we have spiritual awakenings, not just one, but awakenings and spiritual experiences. But literally, in my case, God fixed me. He took me from a complete introvert when I came into AA and had been tested psychologically as a complete introvert to within a few years being an extrovert. When I came to AA, I could not stand in front of two people and speak. Within 1 year, I had to go down to the Regency and speak to 900 engineers from around the country and did it with no problem. Not because of me, but because of the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and my high power. So the gift of sobriety to me is a gift of a new life. Not an improvement of my old life, but it is truly a gift of a brand new life. Even my family would say in my early sobriety, are we talking about the new Matt or the old Matt? And AA taught me about having fun, as Evelyn mentioned. It's very important, and Evelyn and Bob, I remember them very well when I first came in. I'd see them over at the Triangle, and it was all that I could do to deal with the extreme loneliness of alcoholism and even getting sober and being bored to death and wondering what was going to happen to me. But the gift that they gave me that I wish to give you is the knowledge that it is worth it. I can truly say, since I've been sober longer than the people who wrote the book when they wrote it, that it actually worked very well, so well, that I can think of nothing more important that I've ever done in my life than my decision to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a wonderful life. I like what it says in the book, Living Sober. There's a section that talks about a life in sobriety, choices we can make. It talks about practical little things, nothing spiritually heavy, but extremely powerful. It talks about things like, what do you do with your time when you're not in AA meetings and when you're not working? And it outlines the things that you could be doing and should be doing. And there's this long list. I hope you all have read the Living Sober book. But anyway, it outlines the things that you can do that will truly make life a joy. And many of the people, I spent the last few weeks actually traveling around the five countries, and I was with a lot of sober AA people. Clancy was one of them. About 60 AA people were with us, my wife and I. And it's a good life. It's enjoyable. If I but stop and do what is suggested in the books. The material is there. It's especially in Living Sober. There's also good material in Stools and Bottles. What it taught me about was anchoring your values. I had a problem with relationships when I was young. I went to Chicago. I met a guy with about all kinds of sobriety when I was new in the program. His name was Paul. He had been part of the Oxford movement. He taught me about anchoring of values. And basically he said the reason of the four absolutes, one of them was purity. And when they created the steps, they left that out, purity. And he says, that's your problem. We thought that would be a problem for some of you all. And I began to study that, and it meant basically that in order to really be able to be comfortable, that I had to have like a lighthouse or one thing that was absolutely stationary in my life, so that I could not constantly waffle around doing whatever I wanted to do. And that anchoring of values is so critical in terms of stability, and especially of having relationships with other people and even in the business world. But I'm really grateful to be here. The gifts of sobriety are so numerous. It's like in the big book, they say, why would you go to Niagara Falls to get water with only a cup when you can go and get all that you want? It's easy to stay sober. For me, it was after I learned some basic things. But it's another thing to be liberated from the bondage of self. Because once I am liberated from the bondage of self, I do not get myself into messes that I used to get myself into. I do not have to fight battles that I used to have to fight, not with anybody else, but with me. And now if I say, Matt, go forward, I can go forward. Or Matt, back up, I can back up. If I say, go to the right, I can go to the right. That's a gift. Because when I got here, I could say, Matt, let's go and let's not have another drink. And I'd go and have another drink. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd say, I'm not going to drink like I did last night. And by 7 o'clock that evening, I was doing the exact same thing. So I want to thank you all for helping me to see how beautiful the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is.
A new Matt with you. We appreciate that. Instead of the old Matt. if it's raining out, and if your windows are down, you might need to put them up. So just so you know. Our last speaker of the night is Cindy. And Cindy came here last year, and I enjoyed talking to her then, and I enjoy talking to her today. And she's, I'm sure, got some wonderful gems for us. So our last speaker of the night, Cindy T. Please help me welcome Cindy.
I'm Cindy Tracy, and I'm an alcoholic. And the trouble with being last is that people keep stealing your thunder. This girl I began sponsoring here a number of years ago. We moved to Virginia with her family, and we still do some sponsoring over the phone and the internet and stuff. But at one point, we started a little intergroup, internet AA group, and really terrific things. We were really sharp. God, alcoholics are sharp. And so one day, it just sort of hit me. Follow the yellow brick road. Only I thought of it a different way. But I thought of the... Huh? Do what? But I was thinking more in terms of the fear things jumping out of the bushes. And fear isn't as awesome when you name it. But I had my last drink after my husband and I wanted to take me to Haiti. Because he had been there once before and loved it, and he wanted me to see Haiti. So we joined the Atlanta Skylarks in January of 1970, and we flew down to Haiti. Hell, I spent 4 days there, and I hadn't seen Haiti yet. They used to call that the Flying Country Club. And so by the time they poured me off the plane and poured me a few drinks down there, shoot, I'm told I had a wonderful time. But all I know is the second day there, I started to get sick. And I couldn't keep a drink down. And all kinds of really nasty things I don't even have to tell you happened. And on Sunday when we were coming back, I had a grand mal seizure right over the Devil's Triangle. And I'm told that I was pronounced dead. But whatever happened to me, I came out of that convulsion for the first time in my adult life, I didn't even think of a drink. Of course, I didn't think of anything. I didn't even know who my husband was. But when we got home, I was just sort of fiddling around through the day, and the next day he came, picked me up, and I didn't know what was going on. All I knew that most of the skin off my tongue was missing. And so they took me in for tests and stuff, and I was hardly making a mark on the brain scan. I mean, it was a bad blowout. And thought I was in the hospital a couple of days, and I was there for 3 weeks. And anyway, all this leads up to something, because I'm going to tell you, we're talking here about a series of events. And you know, we take these isolated things in our lives sometimes, and we think, oh, this is so awful. Oh, this is so bad. But this led to the biggest miracle in my life. Because earlier that fall, I had had a temporary job cutting radio commercials for the GE representative in Atlanta. And I was replacing temporarily a girl who was taking a leave of absence, supposedly to get a divorce or whatever. And anyway, she came back, and I thought, oh, terrible thing, terrible thing, terrible thing. I thought this was going to be my permanent job because I was so wonderful, right? I was so drunk every day. All the time, the big pocketbook, the whole thing. Everybody in the place knew I was a drunk. So anyway, the boss came and he told me that this girl was coming back on Monday and he wouldn't need me any longer. And then, of course, Haiti came after that. One day, after I got out of the hospital and I was told later that the doctor didn't even want to turn me loose, he wanted to lock me up in Milledgeville. So alcohol can take you from what you perceive as a brain child to an empty hole. An empty skull. So anyway, one day I remembered that I had a lot of books that belonged to this GE representative. It was one of those wonderful days. I'd probably been sober a couple months at this time, or dry. I hadn't had a drink, hadn't thought of a drink. That is amazing. And my husband was drinking every night. Still, I didn't think of a drink. And I remembered these books, and so I scooped them up, and I took them back to the GE dealer. And when I walked up there, I got there at noon, and everybody should have been at lunch. But standing in the door was this girl that I had replaced, and my old boss. And I handed him those books, and he looked at me really, you know, slouch-eyed, the way people used to look at us, like they couldn't, you know. He said, "Cindy, you're looking good." And I said, my mouth said, it went, believe me, I had not to this day admitted I had a problem with alcohol. I said, "Well, I haven't had a drink." And I saw this girl's eyes open up, and he looked at me. And then my mouth said, "My doctor suggested I try AA." Now, I had never had an intention of coming to AA. AA to me was a big soup kettle in the middle of a floor with a bunch of bewhiskered, dirty, filthy, stinking, smelly old men jittering around it with moths flying out of their beard. And I knew I wasn't like that, and so I didn't figure I was an alcoholic. So, but when I said that, Sandy did this. And she took me into the soundproof booth. And she showed me her AA meeting book. Now, when I had had her job the fall before, she'd been coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. All these worst things turned into the best things if you just follow them through and see where they lead. And I found that over and over and over and over again. Every time I'm tempted now to get disappointed, I think, wait a minute. Under this shit, there's a pony. And I wait, and I see where it takes me. But Sandy lured me to my first AA meeting by saying there was a woman speaking. She didn't, I don't know, she said lecturing. See, she sensed that there was some little arrogance in here. I only had one brain cell, but it was arrogant. And so she sensed that, and she told me about this lecture. This brilliant woman who had lectured all over the world on alcoholism. I said, "But I'm not an alcoholic." She said, "I didn't say you were." "But I think you seem to be interested in it, and this woman can tell you a lot." So I went to NABA that night. My husband, we took Sandy out to dinner, and she's in the back seat just chirping away, you know, the way you do. And I was all ears, one brain cell working, but it was absorbing stuff. And she takes me into NABA, and there must have been 200 people there. And when I walked into, the place was a pink haze of laughter and joy. I'd never been anywhere like this in my life. I hadn't seen it anywhere in my life. People having a genuine good time. I was running stark, head on, into honesty everywhere I turned. And I've always been attracted to honesty. I thought I was honest. But I wasn't that kind of honest. I had what we call the Cindy lie. You know, I can't come to work today, I have to go by the doctor. And I would drive by the doctor on wherever I was going. You know. That was a Cindy lie. I'd go out of my way to make sure it wasn't a lie. So. But anyway, this woman was there, Betty B. And that's how I met Evelyn over there. Was at Lithonia, at Lee's wonderful home groups out there. God, those were great meetings. And Betty got up there and she talked. And I heard her say, "Alcoholism is disease. You drink your way in and you learn your way out. There's no other way in and there's no other way out. You can't buy your way out. You can't lie your way out. You can't cry your way out. And the crushing blow to the alcoholic, you can't charm your way out." And I loved it. I loved it. I laughed. I who could not finish a sentence when I came into this program that night. I who could not read a sentence. I had read it over and over again and still didn't know what I'd read. I had no functioning memory at all. And yet I remember every single word that woman said that night. And my miracle started that night. And I got so filled. She made these steps dance. It was a wonderful thing. I left there scared to death that somebody was going to discover I wasn't really an alcoholic after all. I wanted to be an alcoholic worse than I ever wanted to be anything in my life. From hearing this woman, y'all sounded so neat. And I kept talking to people, and I noticed how fried everybody was. But I knew also that I was not working too well up here. And I went up to Betty after that meeting, and I said, well, if I stay around here, will I get smart like the rest of you? She said, oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I don't know how smart I am. Everything I've got is information that I've absorbed from you, and I'm glad to see you taking notes. I was told to do that the first night I came to AA. I've always done it. I always have a pen in my hand. Because what I don't know, what I can't remember, I don't know. And what I don't know can kill me. It's not what I knew that got me where I was. It was what I didn't know. And y'all got the answers. There is so much to this program that it just constantly expands. When I was about 10 years sober, I asked Maggie to be my sponsor. And she involved me not only in a 12 and 12 study group, which was her personal little group that she had for her sponsorees, but in her big book study group on Thursday night at Biscayne, and I carry that forth. And this is what we are. We here are walking memorials to those people who meant so much to us, who've given us so much. I remember Betty and Miriam and Joe. Joe called me one day when I was in one of my black funks. I used to get in those a lot. And I was in this particular one because the IRS was giving me a fit. And so Joe called me up and just chat. And I said, boy, I am so mad, I am so resentful. And he said, Cindy, there's no such thing as a justified resentment. And I started complaining about the IRS. He said, that's almost a justified resentment. He said, tell you what you do, Cindy, when you get in a mood like this, just go through the house quoting the 12 steps. If possible, sing them. And I thought that was nonsense, but I did it. I've always done what I was told to do in AA. And nobody has ever told me to do anything that was bad for me. I believed what I heard here. I believed the goodness I saw here. I've tested it over and over again. It's always been there. I had one sponsor who used to call me up at the end of every conversation. She'd say, I love you. And it would always flash through my mind like a neon sign. That'll change when you get to know me. But it never did. I remember the day that I said to my mother, whom, my God, we had been butting goats ever since I stopped being cute. You know, when mothers turn against their kids when they turn 13. And I understand a lot of that now, because even though I didn't drink at 13, I have no doubt that I was an alcoholic then. My personality was always withdrawn, afraid. And that's another thing. I had a fear-driven life. And one of these days, I call Mother. And at the end of the conversation, I said, I love you, Mother. And my mother was an angry, awesome woman. And she didn't know what to say. And I realized in a flash that this is something she hadn't heard in her adult life. She didn't know how to react to it. The next time, she called me the following Sunday. And we chitty-chatted about, and before she hung up, she said, we love you. See, she couldn't say I. She said, we love you. Well, when my mother passed away, we were great friends. And I began to understand some of the reasons that she was the way she was with me. And it didn't matter anyway. I've learned so many things through here. The only character defect actually is fear. And I think of fear as a spider in a web. And the web is made up of all those other little things like self-pity and resentment and all that other nasty little stuff. And you can tear that web down to as long as you want to, but if you don't get rid of that spider, it's just going to build another web. So I've learned that resentments I had mostly were due to my own planning that didn't come off right. People weren't answering my expectations. Since in the last few years, I have become so awed by this program. It is a mystical, magical program. And you're talking about reading the big book and having things occur to you. You said that. It's more than that. It's like your own biography starts to come out from under the words. And this is why it seems to change. That's the mystical part of it. It's not that it's great literature, but it's a great God idea. I've totally changed my mind about so many things. I've learned them, and I agree with Evelyn. I hate to see those 11 promises stressed, because I found 114 others that are just as good. And one of them addressed itself to one of my greatest fears. I swear I'd come here and get sober and get boring. And that life would be boring, and life would be dull. Now, mind you, I didn't want to drink, but I was still afraid of sobriety. And there's a promise in there that says your imagination will be fired. What a wonderful thing to read. And the reality of it. And it has been fired. You guys, this is one of the values of a pen and pencil, a pad. You're going to hear the best jokes. I heard a couple, I'm going to steal them. I love that jackass. And we are plagiarizers, and that's okay. That's how we stay sober. We pass it on, right? And I don't know what part of my life I could say resembled the me I used to be. But all I know is that I brought into this program burnt ashes. A personality made up of bits and pieces of everybody I'd ever known. Every time I'd see something I liked in somebody, I'd try to imitate it and I'd make it part of me. But it wasn't part of me. I didn't ever at any time think of checking inside to find the me that God made. It never occurred to me that there was anything there but surface, because I was surface, and everything I saw was surface, and everything I was reading was surface. And I couldn't understand why everybody didn't seem to react to me the same way they did to the other people who had those neat characteristics. And I found out nobody likes a phony. That's another thing. I think we alcoholics are irresistibly drawn to honesty. It's such a lure to us. I love to be able to look somebody in the eye. And that's another one of my promises I love. You can look the world in the eye. I don't have to duck anybody anymore. I don't have to be afraid to answer the telephone. I don't have to cross the street if I see somebody I don't know or don't remember or don't want to know. It doesn't matter. I don't run from anybody anymore. It's not that I'm so outrageously courageous. But my fear-driven life has turned into a faith-driven life. And I just know that no matter what seems to be going on, like Evelyn, I've had a lot of really rough things happen to me. All the people I've known and loved all my life have one by one died, but they all saw me sober before they went. What a blessing that was. And not only that, but I don't think earth people ever really do understand what we're about. Because I don't think we're like anybody else. I don't think we ever were. I think we're wired different. I know I always thought different even as a little kid. I was always sort of running on a different trolley line. And people would sort of wave on their way by, "Hey, when are you going to visit us?" One of the most important things I've learned is that I don't give myself any more nine-step work to do. I don't believe you can violate your conscience to stay sober. So I don't violate my conscience. Betty B. taught me an awful lot of affirmations. These are the things that I built my foundation on. And she said, one of them, "I live in the midst of the divine circulation of good, and all my needs are abundantly met here and now." I got sober on that. Every time I'd start thinking about the future or worrying, oh God, we worry. We bring baggage in here, right? Baggage and bills. And nothing's going right, and resentments, and nobody likes you, and boom. And so I used that affirmation every time my mind started focusing on things like that. I didn't know what I was doing, but it worked. It absolutely does. The whole Spirit of God goes before me, making my way easy, safe, and happy. That'll move the traffic out of the way. You get in a traffic jam, use it. It works. Since I've been in the program, I've seen a lot of people try to program the program. Well, this program's already been programmed. We can use the same things that have worked for the last 65 years. Work magnificently. We don't have to jazz it up. We don't have to call it something else. Alcoholics Anonymous is Alcoholics Anonymous, singleness of purpose. We stay focused on our... We're not an answer to everybody's problem. Bill wrote a great pamphlet about that. We can't answer the world's problems. But we have found something that the world can imitate and does it well. Because there's something about a common solution to a common problem that will work in every area. We're driven, I think, to work it better than most people do because our lives depend on it. But to see the direction this program has taken me and the things I have learned, I know a lot of people probably as baffled as I was, but somebody mentioned the third step. I wrestled with that thing for 5 years. And one day I went to a retreat of Clarence Snyder's down in Florida. And Clarence said something. He was describing the steps and how they dovetail, how each one leads to the next. And you don't leave a step behind. You drag it with you. You take it with you because you're bringing information with you. You don't ever leave a step behind. And when he got to the third step, he brought up something that I, of course, had read those steps, had them memorized, but for some reason, I had not computed it. I hadn't really fed it in to that feeling level where things operate. He said, we turn our lives and our will over to the care of God. I don't know how many people I have heard do the same thing I did when they start talking about the third step, turn my life and go over to God. I said, how do you do that? How do you do that? But care I can understand. You put the word care in, changes the meaning of the step for me. Because I know that God ain't going to lead me to a saloon. I know that there is a power in this universe that regarded me enough to give me the great good fortune to come to these groups, to come into this program, and to build a life that I am so grateful for. You know, every day is not birds singing, but it's all right. I remember how birds sing. And I just know that if I just next step it, you know, just keep right on, I just stay sober. I don't relate. Nothing's related to alcohol, let's face it. The only reason we did it was because we had to have an excuse to drink. That's why we're crisis-evoking people, right? Always got to get a crisis going so we can say, I'll show you who wouldn't drink, right? Well, I don't think that way anymore. I know spaghetti hadn't got anything to do with wine. And pizza hadn't got anything to do with beer. And if somebody doesn't react to me the way I think they should, what's going to change if I take a drink except me? It doesn't change anybody else's ideas. So I've just learned to separate alcohol. I'm an alcoholic. It's a problem only if I drink alcohol. It's a problem only if I think anybody else's drinking affects me. My husband continued to drink. Evelyn can tell you he was going to AA meetings with me. A few snorts, but he loves AA. He just didn't want to stop drinking. But he loves AA. He knows this program better than a lot of people who are here. And he knows when he hears it violated, it makes him mad. He'll go to battle for AA. But he didn't want to stop drinking. I didn't drink no matter what. No matter what. That's not something I do. And as long as I don't take a drink, I know that whatever seems to me... See, a problem isn't anything but a clue anyway. It's not a permanent condition. Now, I used to think every time I got a problem, it was permanent. I was afflicted somehow. I was a victim. I don't think that way anymore. I think of a problem as a clue. Okay, where did I derail? What do I need to correct? And it'll show me. So it's helped me avoid a lot of problems that are kind of more, that could be worse. So these are all things y'all taught me. You taught me to laugh. You taught me to cry. And make no mistake, that was a biggie. Because I hadn't cried since I was 6 years old. Because they used to tell me, big girls don't cry. And I wanted my mother's approval, and I wanted everybody else's approval, and for some reason adults are threatened by kids that cry. And I remember one day I fell on my skates, and I got a great big knot on the back of my head, and I ran to my mother and I said, I didn't cry. And she said, good girl. And my tears dried up. But you know something? They turned into rage. Nobody ever told me good girls didn't get mad. So this good girl knew all about rage. Y'all took that away from me. I don't have to be driven by that kind of negative energy any longer. Because there is a solution to anything that can come up in your life and covered in these steps. And I didn't wear my glasses, so I can't read my notes, so it doesn't make any difference anyway. But I appreciate y'all being here because I love you very much.